Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where this week Adam and I are joined by Wissam Sombol. Wissam is the CEO at Delve Health. Wissam, welcome to the show. I've given you a quick introduction there, but for those that are not familiar with you or Delve Health, give us a quick overview as to what the business is, what you guys do in terms of your main focus, and then we'll get
For
into
sure.
things.
So thank you so much for having me on. So my name is Wissam Sombol. I have been in the clinical research arena for nearly 24 years. Delve is an organization. We co-founded Delve back in 2016, and our focus has always been, how can we make it easier for patients to be part of clinical trials, whether virtually or in a hybrid fashion? One of the problems that we see from a clinical trial perspective is nearly 70% of those patients live at least 2 hours from their nearest clinical trial clinic. And nearly 30% of these patients drop out early. And so much of this can cost up to $7.5 million in losses for a pharmaceutical or a medical device company. I've actually started Delve because of a personal problem that I've seen. My mother, she had cancer, and a clinical trial was really her only option for of survival. So I was able to find the right clinical trial, but then the manual intervention in her driving of going to Mayo Clinic every 2 weeks from Minneapolis, it's a 2-hour drive, and you look at some of the activities that she had to do at Mayo. We could have simply sent a nurse to her home to conduct vitals and things of that nature. You look at, the old ways of collecting diaries, right? It's on paper, and is it really accurate or not? So, as I kind of looked at my mother's journey, there are better ways that we conduct clinical trials. Clinical trial, believe it or not, is, I look at it as a treatment option. There are so many success stories of people that have been part of clinical trials because the current drugs just don't exist for them, right? So that's really kind of what we've started with Delve Health is, we built an end-to-end platform where we can help engage patients remotely, collect data from patients, investigators, be able to schedule nurses to go into these patients' homes and allow nurses to collect the right set of information, but also enable the televisit capability and the telemedicine capability. We do quite a bit of with wearables as well, where we can utilize an Apple, a Fitbit, a Withings, or any other sensor into these patients' homes, where we can remotely collect a lot of this data and be able to truly understand what's happening to this patient. We know that, patients are either home or out walking the dog or doing something, but we don't really know so much about, is a drug working? Is it not working? Is their heart rate spiking up or down? Right. So much of this passive data really empowers clinicians and physicians and everybody to truly understand what's happening to this patient at home. And if we're able to make it on the fly where we sense a spike, we shoot out a request to a set of questions for, diaries and things of that nature, make it subjective. We're able to truly understand a whole lot more about this patient and truly be able to help deliver drugs to patients faster.
Incredible. Well, I think you probably touched upon it there, with Sam, but it's a question that we always ask on the show, and that is, I guess, how did you get into clinical research? If you were to give us a kind of an overview of as to your background, 2016, you mentioned, I think it was 2016 you mentioned, wasn't it, when you founded Delve, but was this your first rodeo? What was your back story prior to then? How did you get into the field of clinical research in general?
I graduated college, and when I graduated college, I didn't really have a job, and somebody was working on something, and he's like, "Hey, I'm doing this. You want to join?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So we went out, lived out of my suitcase for about 10 months. And the project that we were working on was to actually go out to all these hospitals all over the world and collect data very specific to cardiovascular disease. The project, unfortunately, didn't really kind of pan out well, but from that, we learned so much where we actually developed a couple of other tools. One of them is, the website dctmd.com. Another one is a platform called Global View, which was actually ended up getting bought out by PPD back in 04.
So that sounds quite entrepreneurial right from the get-go. So straight out of college, a friend said, "Look, do you want to do this?" And what was your job role back then? Because yeah, even then, it sounds like it was it yourself and kind of your friend and colleague? Were you kind of already straight in as entrepreneurs, business owners, or was there a specific title, as it may be?
I was everything from the garbage man, the product manager, the developer. It was a two-man job operation, right? We did have investors and things of that nature, and he's kind of done a lot of this. To me, it was kind of my early stages into the entrepreneurial world. So, so honestly, that's just kind of how I got into it, and ever since then, I have been in clinical trials.
Okay. So look, that earlier exposure, you talked about having investors. How did yourself and your friend go about doing that? Because look, I mean, there's probably tons of people that have ideas and want to go out and do these things, and it's easy to say, oh, we just need to get investment. How on earth do you start? How do you know what to do when you don't know what to do? And what did it look like back then? It must have been pretty crazy.
Honestly, I didn't know what to do, right? So my colleague was the one that really kind of did everything, right? So I came into this, and they've already kind of, they had the set of investors kind of in the background. And so I was really kind of more focused on the tech side of things. So my job was to go out, fly out, meet with doctors, meet with people to kind of help build the product and kind of build that success story. And that was honestly kind of my core focus back then. It wasn't, I did Delve is probably the first company where I'm all in about, the business scenario and the investments, and we need to collect, raise money and things of that nature. But even with Delve, so Delve is my third startup in the space. And even kind of throughout that process, I've learned so much about how can we stay lean, So our first, few years, we bootstrapped, the heck out of it until we kind of gained that momentum and gained some of the success. And then it wasn't until just last year that we said, you know what, let's just got to raise a little bit of money so that we can, kind of boost our growth and, gain our credibility in the marketplace.
Okay, so look, let's talk about that and Delve in particular, because 2016 is when you started. You were bootstrapping it. You had some experience with like the tech side of things, clinical trials previously. But this was actually your third startup, and you touched upon it kind of with your own intro about personal experiences that perhaps led to this. Do you mind sharing about kind of what was the trigger for you to start Delve, and does that perhaps have any impact on how you named it? How did you come about the name, and what was the real trigger to get the business going?
Yeah, so the real trigger was I blogged quite a bit about my mother and her situation. And believe it or not, I started getting people calling me as in, hey, my niece is having this problem, she's got cancer, or like I've had quite a few people that just kind of reach out. And given that I've lived the clinical trial world myself, I've been kind of telling people's like, here's where you need to go, go look for investigators and doctors that this is kind of what they do from a research perspective. I'm a fan of research, and I'm a fan of doctors that conduct this type of research just because I feel like sometimes often they have a different spin on things. And funny enough, I actually met as part of this journey, went out and actually interviewed quite a few people, and one of the people that I interviewed, this guy about 20 some years ago was told, he had a tumor in his brain, went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you've got 2 to 3 weeks to live. And the guy was like, oh, I'm not going to take this for an answer, right? So he went out and he went on a search to kind of figure out what to do. He met with like, four or five different doctors. And it wasn't until he actually found a doctor that is very research oriented, conducted some sort of a mini trial, identified patients that are similar to that person, and started kind of testing with various drugs. Today, this guy is alive. He's got a family. He's cancer-free. So it's, you know, the world of research is just kind of phenomenal, right? So when we started Delve, kind of our idea initially was, how can we help patients to really find the trials that are best fit for their needs, right? Or help maybe even broker connections between patients and doctors, that this is kind of all they do. So honestly, that's kind of what we kind of started with.
Yeah.
We got stuck a bit in regards to the business model. Who's going to pay the bill? How are we going to make money? So as we kind of talked to other companies and organizations, we ended up following some sort of a shiny object. And unfortunately, we followed it for about 6 months that kind of derailed us from our original mission. So 6 months down the road, we went down that path and this company was like, you do it, we're going to pay for it. We did it. They did not pay for it.
what was that in particular? Are you able to talk about it? Or
It was a solution more focused on what's called an MDR. An MDR, you know, any medical device that really kind of needs to gain approval in Europe.
Yeah.
We ended up developing a platform that can help researchers kind of, you know, search faster. The platform would really kind of automate so much of the data that you've searched across publications and things of that nature. So we built more of an AI-driven platform that would go out and source data across 30 million different publications plus, right? Wow. And really kind of automate that decision support process. So we honestly developed it. And we kind of thought about, let's go out and sell it. But it's just not my field, right? It's not an area that, like, I've got a ton of experience in, right? My experience is really kind of a lot more closer to, like, the patients and the data and the clinical trial aspect of things. So it was kind of at that point where we said, you know what, we've got to get a little bit closer to the patient side of things. And as we kind of tried to go a bit closer to the patient side of things, everybody was, you know, telling me, it's like, got to be careful, HIPAA, try to stay away from HIPAA, things of that nature. So we took some advice and we said, okay, let's try to stay away from HIPAA. So we did a pivot. We developed a tool that basically, so the 50-page protocol document that you have, we were able to kind of take it and turn it into like a mobile app. Right. So basically you open up a mobile app for your study and, you know, your investigators, your study team, everybody has kind of quick access to, you know, adverse event information. Who do I need to contact? All this stuff.
When you say your investigators, your study team, who are you talking about? Who was the client, as it might be, the customer?
The customer. So right now we've kind of gone closer now to like a VP of clinical operations or clinical affairs, still kind of anybody within the clinical trial realm. We're a bit closer now to the patient, but we're trying to kind of stay that arm's length so that we don't get into the HIPAA side of things. It was a cool tool. It worked well. We're able to do some sales, but my gut feeling was still, I'm not there. Right. I'm not achieving the success I want. I got to get closer to the patient. So 2018 is really kind of when we took a deeper dive into, you know, PROs is really kind of where we started. Right. So we started developing patient report outcomes and we're like, you know what, we got to go after the patient. The patients are where the struggle is at. The data compliance is a big issue. So we started kind of on that path with developing patient report outcome solutions with the mobile applications. And then we honestly just kind of expanded our platform from there on, you know, as we got more clients, as we learned so much more about kind of the pain points in the conduct of the trial, as I kind of remember more on the journey that my mother had, you know, all the different issues. So it was almost like we created this pipeline, right? So from there, we created a a randomization tool, IRT-RTSM, able to where we're able to identify the drugs, and you're able to kind of come in and you can configure your randomization scheme for your clinical trial, and then the system will manage the depots where, you know, who can get access, you know, I'm sorry, where do we ship drugs to and from, and help you truly kind of manage this entire process. Shortly after, we started kind of on the wearables, you know, game, right? So we started kind of really with the Apple Watch, where we've developed our own proprietary app on the Apple Watch, where we're able to collect data from these patients remotely. Uh-huh. And as we're collecting all this stuff, we developed a really robust communication capability platform. And as part of this communication, we're able to, you know, listen and learn and figure out who's responding to their data, who's not responding, who has their watch on, who doesn't have their watch on. So we're utilizing text messages as a technique to say, if we're not seeing data from you, let's say within an X number of hours or days, we're able to quickly nudge you using text message and remind you, put your watch on. Uh-huh. But we took it a bit further as well, where even the PROs, we're able to utilize the text message to collect the PROs. So for example, if a PRO data has been pushed out to you and you haven't responded in, you know, 4 or 5 hours, we can send you a reminder in a text message, say, you know, you have an outstanding PRO to respond to, or a diary to respond to. And we can do it even further, where you don't even have to have the app. We can send you kind of a secured link within the text message so that you can open the secure link within the text message directly. So that way you can respond to the diary right then and there. Wow. And it was pretty impressive, because just the ability, by implementing the text message, we're able to see a lot, much better compliance from a lot of the patients. And we can see response in probably 4 minutes in a lot of the, in some of the studies, we're seeing nearly 95 to 96% better compliance than other studies.
I think a lot of the time the key is in that nudge or that follow up, you know, in this case, the text message. So clearly it is. Adam, it seems that you're going to wade in with something here as well.
As you're describing that, Wissam, I couldn't help but think that maybe 2018, you were just about to hit that sweet spot. And dare I say it, then we were hit with a pandemic and you already had this DCT tool in place. And was that your moment? Because that's what I'm hearing where this might be going to, because, you know, obviously working as closely with clinical trial data as I do, that certainly was my experience. And as you're telling your story, I'm sensing that 2019, 2020 might have been a fairly good time for you.
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. So in 2018, I went out to CNS Summit. We had a booth, and that's exactly what we're talking about, the virtualization of a clinical trial. But people looked at us and were like, there's no way that we could do it, right? There's no way that this can happen. Pandemic hits. And of course, everybody's on that bandwagon. I was like, oh yeah, let's, you know, virtualize clinical trials.
Now.
Incredible.
Like, can you do it tomorrow?
A change in events. Look, I'm interested, and we touched on it just before we jumped on to the show today, was how you got through those kind of early years mentally. It sounds like there was a bit of, we're going to do this, then there was a change of direction, then you were like, no, that's not quite our sweet spot, no, we want to get closer to the patients. There was a few things where you like just probably a little bit frustrated for yourself. I know what I'm like, you know, because I want to pick up an idea, I want to run with it, and I want it to be a, you know, knock it out of the park success from day one. To, you know, to keep grinding through it like that for a couple of years takes a bit of mental strength. So how did you deal with that, I guess, yeah, as a founder, you know, of a business? I mean, I can see a few pictures there in the background of the shop for anyone who is watching the show. For those that are perhaps listening to this on the audio, just give us a quick overview of that, and yeah, how you did manage it. That'd be useful.
Yeah. The first 2 years were really difficult, probably the most difficult I have ever experienced, right? You're in the grind day in, day out, and you're frustrated. no income, nothing is coming through. I don't want to go out and raise money for something. I don't know where the future is going to take me. And, you know, my wife actually ended up buying me these plaques in the back here. One is stay hungry and humble, persistence, and then you got the hustle, and then remember why you started. And I kid you not, every day I come in and I look at these. And I remember my mom, right? Sorry, I'm getting a little teary here.
You're welcome. No, it's, yeah.
And the remember why you started is kind of what brought me back there, right? The hustle is, I get that a lot from my dad. My dad is a hardcore entrepreneur. He's failed a few times. He's made his successes. The man is 82 years old and he's still hustling, you know?
Wow.
And the persistence, right? Stay hungry has always been, I'm hungry to succeed, not from a money perspective, but truly from delivering value to the patients. And this is really kind of why we're here, why we started this. So this is honestly kind of where we kind of stuck to it. You know, 2018, we had a point where we said, are we going to make it or are we going to stop? Right. And then end of 2018 is really kind of was our, we had a really nice contract that said, okay, we're on to something. This is kind of when we did the pivot closer to the patient. And 2019, we doubled this. In 2020, we tripled. And, you know, so it's been kind of that curve has started kind of going up there. Probably, you know, about 2019. So, you know, for anyone that's looking to do something, I often hear people going in and thinking, hey, 9-10 months and I'm out. It doesn't work that way. If you really want to be successful at a startup, honestly, it can take you 5 years to kind of figure out, are you really on the right track or not? So
incredible. With Sam, like that's, I mean, how that must have then, kind of after going through that and kind of looking at those pictures of yours day in, day out, thinking like, this is why I'm doing it. This is why I've got to stay hungry. This is why I've got to be persistent. Takes a lot, but like clearly, you know, you've got those characteristics and that mentality from your parents. How did it then feel when you say, look, you doubled your numbers, you tripled your numbers, you know, that self-ambition of wanting that success, not necessarily for the money, but, you know, just to make a success of what you said you were going to do. How did that then feel to get that initial success? Must have been incredible, right?
Yeah, it feels really good. It feels really, really good. I mean, end of 2021, we had probably one of our largest contracts back then, which was in the millions. I probably almost cried that day when we had this.
I can imagine. Everyone loves someone that, you know, generally hustles and works hard and is trying to do good. And to get those wins, it feels amazing. I mean, to be honest, I get it even if I'm doing small deals sometimes, because it's just that little win. So to have, you know, things that are in the millions, I can understand that it just how you must have felt. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Adam, you going
to
pitch in?
Yeah, I was
going
to say,
there?
I mean, James, we speak to so many business leaders who start from humble beginnings and really dig in for the long haul. And you know, what I hear with Sam is just your persistence. I'm seeing it behind you, but I'm hearing it also in, you know, in the words and in your motivation. We all know our why. We have to remind ourselves why we do the things we do and who we're doing it for, because invariably it's not just for ourselves, is it? It's for those around us. It's for our family. But also, as you described, you know, your personal story and your personal journey reinforces your why, doesn't it? And I'm hearing that loud and clear in everything that you're describing, and the humility with which you describe it as well is also very, 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 very lovely to hear as well.
Thank you.
Well, look, from that point there with Sam, I guess, you know, bringing us up to speed in terms of how did things look as you went through COVID? Because as, you know, Adam touched upon, you know, that must have been, as much as it's, you know, a terrible situation, lots of people affected by that. certainly a business opportunity for people to finally stand up and say, you know what, you've got something here. And clearly that's why things started to, you know, boost as they did. But how are things now looking coming out kind of the other side of things? Because again, it's when forced to adopt it, everyone was on it. How are things looking now that I guess kind of COVID, as it may be, is settling down somewhat?
Yeah. I see the post-COVID world as the new clinical trial 2.0, for a lack of better words. There's definitely a lot more companies that are embracing the hybrid capabilities. Some are trying to do the fully virtual capabilities. But I think we're still far from truly embracing technology to what it does best, right? You know, we talk about, for example, artificial intelligence and facial recognition and things of those natures that, you know, or ChatGPT, right? Like we look at all these things as they are today. I think there's a lot more to come. I think there's definitely a lot more automation, and we have much better tools and capabilities today that can help us do our clinical trials better, faster, and cheaper, believe it or not, right? So I think there's definitely a new norm. I still don't think that we all know what that new norm really is, but it's coming through. But it definitely does have a lot more virtualization to it than you can. And just because of that new norm, we're able to kind of expand our horizon from a technology perspective, right? So for example, right now, because as part of our business model is we want to empower nurses to support those patients either from a virtual perspective or to go into their homes, right? So it helps us also develop more capabilities within our system where a nurse can have access to a specific patient record down to the visit level, for example, right? Or implement like facial recognition so that way when you're consenting patients, you know for sure that this patient is in the clinical trial only once, right?
Wow.
AI, right? So when you think about, you know, can we utilize AI to understand how well some of those patients are doing, which of those patients are risky, which are not, you know, what can we do? So I think that's going to be honestly the new norm from a tech perspective, but also from conducting better clinical trials for the future.
Sure. No, it amazes me every day about the new innovations that I hear about and how things work and what can be done. As someone that, you know, doesn't necessarily work on the ground or, you know, on that side of the industry, as it may be, just, you know, I'm just work from a recruiting perspective. It's just, it baffles me how it actually all works. You've talked a lot about kind of, you know, expansion in terms of, you know, the delivery, the services, the clients. How have things changed since those early days where, you know, it was yourself, you know, looking at the plaques on the wall and things? What does the business look like now? I'm guessing that you are perhaps remote, but, you know, in terms of headcount, how you operate and things like that, how have things changed? What does it look like?
Yeah, so we've got three locations in that now. So Minneapolis is our hub.
Yeah.
We've got a location, actually four locations, sorry. So we've got a location out in Belize. So we have a concierge service and support. That's kind of where our Belize office really kind of does. We've got an office out in Pakistan, and we've got a presence out in Europe, UK to be specific. So, you know, so we're at about 27 or so, but we're looking to probably double that number by end of this year as well, as, you know, kind of given our growth. So, yeah.
Wow. And how have you gone about that? Because again, like kind of the international hiring, have you found that, you know, people have been, again, more keen to work remotely and things like this? How have you found, you know, building that international team?
Yeah. It depends on where you go, right? So, for example, like Belize, everybody's going to come into the office, right? in Pakistan, most people come to the office. You know, others are kind of all over the place, right? But from a virtual aspect, honestly, it's working just perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
We see that more people are enjoying the virtual aspect of things than not, just because it gives you some of that flexibility, but it also depends on, you know, what does that role really look like?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just also hearing, you know, where your locations are, Sam, it sounds like you can do global workflow as well. So is that what you're enabling yourself to do with having your, you know, your hub in Pakistan, your UK base and your US? Because that's how I'm used to working. And certainly it sounds like there might have been a theory and rationale behind that.
Yeah, so that's really kind of exactly kind of why we did that, right? We wanted to have a global presence. I mean, some of our trials right now are all over the place, right? So we're doing trials in US and Europe, Asia, Middle East, right? So we've got clinical trials almost going everywhere, Asia, right? So that's that global presence helps us support these clinical trials in various ways as well.
Mm-hmm. And do you find, I guess, that with the, you talked about kind of wearables and reminders and nudges earlier, do you find that the data you're able to collect differs from location to location, depending on the, you know, general standard of living and access to healthcare and things like this? How does, I mean, does it have an impact, or is that a crazy question from my end?
It depends on the impact aspect, right? So oftentimes it depends, does the patient have to pay for it or not?
Mm-hmm.
Does it, you know, it depends on, is it something that's tied to a procedure or not, right? So for example, you can go to Europe, for example, and some of the studies that we're doing, if they're using a device that we have to connect and collect the data from, is it a commercialization device or is it really something on a clinical trial? Who's paying for it? Honestly, that's oftentimes the question.
Yeah.
Other than that, not really. It doesn't really matter. What we're seeing that's really kind of interesting is if you're using a wearable, it's really kind of the age
question. Demographic. Right. Right.
Yeah. And early on, a lot of people were like, you know, people are above 50, 60, forget it. They're not going to put on a watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you'd be surprised. They're even more intact with this than people in the 30s and 40s, right? Because they really want to watch their heart rate more. They want to watch their steps, right? So they're really kind of more connected with their health. And mm-hmm. like pediatric, you know, like kids, right? So we get kids and we give them like a Fitbit watch. They love it, right? They'll put it on the whole time. And you'd be surprised. They love these watches because it's like it's a new gadget tool.
Yeah.
You know? So the myth around the different demographics and they're not really going to comply is not true anymore.
Okay, interesting. Look, I guess along this journey that you've had, you mentioned some big figures and deals that you'd brought in a few moments back. But what would you say has been the biggest achievement for yourself and Delve Health to this point?
The team growth has been kind of a big, huge achievement in honestly conducting as many clinical trials as we are today. Those are probably our biggest two achievements. Our tech stack and kind of how our technology has grown quite a bit in our set of offers. A lot of people, it's interesting, a lot of people say like, you know, your team is small. How can you do all this? We've built so much automation from the ground up initially because we wanted to be ready for the moment that we are in today. You know, as we grow and as we scale from an operational perspective, we wanted to make sure that our technology is solid enough that it can scale up. We're an agile factory and we're an agile shop, right? Where we're able to turn things around in a week, not weeks, but 1 week, right?
Wow.
So those are things that honestly we've engraved in our DNA since our inception, and they've helped us tremendously.
So dare I say it, is the challenge for you will the challenge be how you translate that into that growth through people? Because at the moment, it sounds like you're very close to the information, you're close to the technology, but the scalability is the thing that will determine whether or not that next phase from small to medium size is translatable, won't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now, our focus has been mostly like medium size, you know, organizations, and we're able to scale quick and fast. And a lot of companies just, you know, given we are who we are and kind of our team, we're able to, you know, move quick and move fast. So, I mean, the response is really going to be in the pudding at the end of the day. So, yeah.
But I mean, looking at your website, I think you refer to yourself as a virtual research organization, don't you? Which, yeah, I think in itself speaks to that point.
Correct.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. And you said that you're probably going to be looking at doubling headcount over the course of this year. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. Is there any other, I guess, plans for expansion, whether it's new regions or predictions that you have with Sam for, kind of the next 18 months, 24 months for yourself and Delve?
Are you talking new regions as in, I mean, right now, so we're
geographical is what I was talking.
Like headcount geographical? So we're looking to grow more probably in the, you know, kind of the Minneapolis office. Eventually soon enough, hopefully like the UK part as well. So those would be two. Our Belize one just kind of keeps growing, and our Pakistan ones are going to keep growing. So honestly, it's kind of all over across. Yeah. Each one of them got a set of different functions and capabilities to grow through. So, yeah, slowly we'll grow that. You know, 18 months is probably about a good number to kind of expand that growth.
Awesome stuff. Well, I appreciate you coming on and, I guess, sharing your journey. Quite a bit of a personal one at times there. Get us all choked up. But look, before we let you get off to enjoy the rest of your day, with Sam, we always finish up the show with a quick fire questions round. So look, I'll kick that off and take you back to your youth and ask, what is perhaps the number one piece of advice that you'd give to your younger self?
You know, I get that question often, and I'm like, God, I don't know what I'd tell my younger self. Like, I've learned a lot, right, because of my younger self, and I don't know that I would honestly do anything different. And I can say all I can, but like, I just feel like without my past, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I'm not sure that I would change a whole lot, to be honest with you.
Fair play. It's your answer. It's your answer. Adam, over to you.
Yeah. Our listeners love to hear the books or podcasts or resources that our interviewees are familiar with or using as their go-to. Are there any that you would point our listeners to?
From a resource perspective, sure. I've been onto a lot of podcasts lately, right? And you know, honestly, some of them have been kind of like, you know, there's a book called A Good Strategy, Bad Strategy that I, you know, I read and I thought it was pretty cool. It kind of shines some really good ideas. One thing that somebody have told me actually a couple of things. One is, you define your own path. Don't let someone else do it for you. And the second one is, when you're doing something, look for the bullseye. What is that bullseye that will help you win? So those are probably honestly kind of the biggest two. There are a ton of resources, but from a startup perspective, just one of those things you've got to watch, you've got to dive in. You know, if you're trying to do it, don't wait too long.
Great advice.
Well, on that side of things, like we've spoken a lot about kind of growth and expansion. You know, clearly growing the team, got some good morals of your own, but in terms of when taking others on, what are the top three qualities that you value most when building your own team with Sam?
The three values, eagerness, right? Is my team kind of eager as much as I am?
Mm-hmm.
Is really kind of a really big one. Teamwork is huge. A lot of people don't really understand it a whole lot. And trust. Trust is just, you've got to be able to trust each other and you've got to be able to roll the same way. Otherwise, it is just not going to work. If the entire team is not able to be on that same page and have that, you know, daily or weekly sync and trust what each other do,
mm-hmm.
It just not going to honestly get there. I tell my team all the time, I'm like, you know, they ask me for stuff and I'll tell them like, nope, it's your job. You tell me what I need to do.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
So you've been very personal in your story. I'm wondering, what is your favorite thing outside of work with Sam?
Outside of work?
Look at the smile. He's already there.
I game quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Call of Duty has been kind of like my jam on the phone. I'll just kind of chill for like an hour and two, and my wife will call on me, and I'm like, I'm not listening to you because I'm playing.
I bet that drives her nuts. It certainly my will wife. Do it with my missus.
Yeah, sometimes like I'll play with my kids, you know. Yep. So I enjoy that quite a bit. Just going for long walks and just kind of listening to a podcast or, you know, finding a beach, which I'm in Minnesota. There are no beaches around there, lakes, you know. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, good to hear. I love a little bit of a personal side of things. It shows that we're all human, have families, enjoy a bit of, yeah, just general mindless downtime from time to time. But look, to bring us back to something kind of a bit more serious and to close the show, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business that you live by?
Don't overthink it at all. You know, life is not worth it. Life is short. We can be gone in a second. Enjoy every minute that you got. And, you know, there's no need for drama, to be honest with you.
Awesome stuff, Sam. Well, it's been a pleasure finally getting you on the show. I know you and I have gone back and forth a few times. But look, for anyone that is looking to reach out to you to learn more about the business, about Delve Health, about your plans for the future, what's the best way to get hold of you in terms of email, website, LinkedIn, Twitter, all of those things? Where should people be looking?
Yeah, so delvehealth.com is probably kind of a good spot if you need to kind of get in contact. There's a contact us area. So that probably becomes kind of the number one. My mm-hmm. Twitter is WSomble is my Twitter, or Delve Health. Excuse me, from a Twitter perspective.
Perfect stuff. Well, we'll get you tagged up with all of that, but it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. To anyone tuning in, make sure you like, subscribe, share your comments on what Sam has had to say. And we will see you again soon for another episode. Cheers, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me.